Last week and this week, we have the story of the crossing of the Jordan River as God's people entered into the land of Canaan. These are reciprocal miracles with the crossing of the Red Sea coming out of Egypt, and then the crossing of the Jordan going into Canaan. The scriptures give us this very lengthy episode in the epic of Joshua in chapters 3 and 4. Last week we looked principally at the events going into the Jordan and crossing over, and today we look at the events of coming out of the Jordan in the crossing over. So if you would, stand with me as I read Joshua chapter 4, once again a lengthy passage. Pay attention to the detail of the story, and then I won't have to recall too much as we go into the lesson. Hear the word of the Lord. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, and the Lord said to Joshua, "Take 12 men from the people, and from each tribe a man, and command them, saying, 'Take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight.'" Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, "Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, 'What do these stones mean to you?' then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever." And the people of Israel did just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, just as the Lord told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priest bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood. And they were there, and they are there to this day. For the priest bearing the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. The people passed over in haste, and when all the people had finished passing over, the ark of the Lord and the priest passed over before the people. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel as Moses had told them. About 40,000 ready for war passed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Command the priest bearing the ark of the testimony to come up out of the Jordan." So Joshua commanded the priest, "Come up out of the Jordan." And when the priest bearing the ark of the Lord came up from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priest's feet were lifted up on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they encamped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And they said to the people of Israel, "When your children ask their fathers in times to come, 'What do these stones mean?' then you shall let your children know, 'Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the rivers of the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea when he dried up for us until we passed over, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever.'" The word of the Lord. You may be seated. The most significant words of this particular story, in my estimation, is the very last sentence that we read. This whole episode happened, the miraculous working of the Lord. The word sign means wonder. It's the same word that's eventually used in the Greek New Testament, which talks about the signs and wonders that Jesus did in performing the miracles that he did. And they were always performed according to the Gospel of John in order that people might believe. John says that Jesus did signs and wonders, many more than can actually be recorded in his gospel. But he said, these are written that you may know that Jesus is the Christ, and that you may believe in him, and that by believing you may have life through his name. The reason that these stones were set up, the reason that this memorial was created, the reason that this story is recounted with such prolix detail is because we need to know it and we need to never forget it. And it's a message to all Israel. Brothers and sisters, that includes you and me. We are today the Israel of God. And this is something that happened to the church about 3,400 years ago. And we need to know what it means. We need to remember it. In fact, that sentence says, so that all the peoples, that is the nations, the Gentiles, people from every tribe, every tongue, every kindred, every ethnicity, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. You need to know that God is a wonder-working, mighty, powerful God, able to effect and to accomplish that which he intends to accomplish, and that you may fear the Lord your God forever. The fear of the Lord is an Old Testament expression, and it means the reverence and the obedience and the service and the obeyance to the true and living God. Fearing the Lord is knowing the Lord, serving the Lord, obeying the Lord, coming to the Lord, trusting the Lord, waiting upon the Lord. The fear of the Lord and those that fear the Lord are the descriptions of the true believers. And so the miracle that we saw in the crossing of the Jordan is really of the same sort, of the same kind. It's the same genre as the miracles that Jesus performed. They were signs and wonders that you would know that God is mighty and that you might fear him, believe him. And it's interesting, the last word is that you may fear the Lord your God forever. It's interesting that it's said back here that the stones were set up. So these stones, in verse 7, these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. In other words, they're still a memorial. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the stones. Let's talk a little bit about this memorial. We spoke last week of the dramatic entry of God's people into the Jordan River. The Jordan was at flood stage. It was a very formidable and looked like an unpassable river before them. And God commanded them to go, and he sent before them the ark, which represents Christ. The most sacred thing in Israel was the Ark of the Covenant. The most sacred thing to God's people is Jesus Christ himself. And as the priest bore the ark and their feet touched the edge of the flooding waters, the Lord stopped the waters, piled it up in a heap upstream, and created dry land that all the people could pass over as an entire nation, an entire people. It's interesting the word that's used here at the very opening. I bet you missed it. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan. Oh, you missed it, didn't you? So I'm going to have to remind you. That's the first time they've been called a nation. Up till now, they've been called a people. They've been a tribe. They've been a family. But now they are a nation. Why? Because in order to have nationality, there must be place along with people. There must be geography to go with genealogy. There must be dominion in order to go with dynasty. God had called His people with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, all the children of Israel, took them down into Egypt, brought them out of Egypt, led them through the desert, and now they've crossed over the Jordan River. They now are a nation. Their home. They have their land. They have their piece of geography that God had promised them from antiquity, and now they are a nation. They have received their deliverance from the Lord. They received their constitution at Sinai. They received their conditioning in the desert. And now they have received their property, their land. In fact, the second part of the book of Joshua is going to be a passing out and a recording of the deeds, the title deeds of all the allotments in the land. And so now as they stand on the west bank of the Jordan, they're standing in their homeland. The nation has passed over the Jordan. And it's very dramatic. It says that when the feet of the priest, Joshua gave the command, the priest came out of the river, walking on dry land, walking up that west bank slope, coming up those two levels of bluffs. But as they got to the point to where the water's ebbing tide would come, the water rushed in upon it. Just as dramatic had been the entry into the water when they stepped in by faith and God stopped the water, so dramatic was the return of the floodwaters. I imagine there's just a little dampness on the heel of the last priest that stepped up that bank as that water washed and flooded through there. And there was no doubt at all that this had been a miracle. This wasn't something that he created, some kind of geological malformation in the riverbed. This was miracle. God had delivered His people and had done it in split-second timing and with a mighty hand. And this had created a dramatic picture in the minds of everyone that witnessed the events of this great day. This day, by the way, was the 10th day of Nisan, which was the first month of the Jewish calendar. And that was the day back in Egypt, on the 10th day of Nisan, that they had selected the Passover lamb. That was the day they pulled the Passover lamb, the little lamb without spot and without blemish, the firstling of the flock. They had pulled that lamb and separated that lamb out of the little flock in order that they might sacrifice him on the Passover day. The Passover day was the 14th day. It would be 4 days or 3 days later. Things are often significant with 3 days in the Bible, aren't they? 3 days later, on the 14th day of Nisan, they will sacrifice the Passover. We'll get to that later. But this is the 10th day, and they've come forth. In other words, the waters have cut them out of the herd of the nations and put them in their place. They've been set aside by God. And the boundary between the east and the west has been recreated by the rushing in of the waters. Now, just before the conclusion of the crossing, something took place that was kind of unusual. Joshua had set it up earlier. He told them that he wanted them to go and choose from each tribe a man. And so they selected from each of the 12 tribes one man. These men were set aside to be porters, to be the men who would carry a stone from the riverbed up the west bank to the first campsite in Gilgal. There would be 12 men carrying 12 stones, each man carrying a stone upon his shoulder. But one of the significant things is that the stones would come from the very place in the riverbed where the feet of the priest holding the ark had stood firmly. And they were to gather these stones from that spot and carry them up the river bank to the first campsite. And that's what they did. We've made quite a point about how the ark represents Christ, typifies Christ. These stones as well This is the first of seven occasions in the book of Joshua the people will do something with stones. They will heap stones up upon a sinful man, Achan, that you'll hear about later. They will pile up the rubble stones of the defeated city of Ai. Later on at the end of the book, Joshua will set up a stone of witness, a stone of testimony again, for the hearing of the covenant. And there are occasions when there will be a mass execution of the kings of Canaan, and stones will be piled up at the mouth of a cave. I'm telling you, the Bible is rich in its imagery of the stone. The stone is a witness. The stone sometimes is a stumbling block. The stone sometimes in the Bible is a foundation stone. Sometimes the stone bears the inscription of the writing and the word of God upon it. And sometimes the stone is the barrier. It's the thing that keeps something in or something out. And it's interesting that when God does miracle, He always does a little business with a stone. For example, rolling a stone away from an empty tomb. They take these stones and they put them in the first campsite, which is Gilgal. Gilgal means round or circle or wheel or turning or rotating. That's what the word Gilgal means in its family of meanings. And some have speculated that that was indeed the configuration of these stones, that these stones were placed there at the campsite and in a circle. Now, the people of God camped in a square, if you'll remember. They camped with three tribes on each side of the tabernacle, with the tabernacle in the very midst. And so it's probable that they set up camp at Gilgal, which, by the way, became their beachhead for their central campaign into the land of Canaan. And when they camped at Gilgal, they probably set up camp in the normal configuration. But somewhere in that campsite with the 12 tribes, and probably right in the very midst of it, Joshua set up this memorial. And it was 12 stones, perhaps arranged in a circle. Now, they were not huge stones because they were small enough or light enough for the priest to be able to carry. My guess is when they selected a man from each tribe, they selected one of these guys that looked like, you ever seen that strong man contest on television, you know, where these guys pick up these heavy things and lift them up, and they pick up heavy stones and they pull, 18-wheelers and all that kind of stuff. They probably knew kind of what they needed, so they probably picked a guy out of the tribe that was young and quite burly and could handle about as big a stone as could be handled. But they weren't that huge. They weren't boulders. But they made this configuration that formed a memorial, a sign of the wonder and the miracle that God had done. The reason is because there must have been something about those stones that was interesting. You know, the Jordan River running right down the very middle had smoothed out certain rocks. You've seen the rocks of a riverbed sometime have a certain configuration and a certain texture to them that rocks that are maybe up on the hillside or up in the mountains do not have. And it was obvious, patently obvious, that these were riverbed stones. And when they came up out of the river and placed them there, it was a witness that they had been in the river. And that is, of course, what all testimony is. That's what all witness is. That's what all memorial is. It's a story, it's a testimony of where you've been and what God has done for you when you were there. That's one of the things I think of when I visit folks in the hospital during the week, is that they're lying in their beds, various degree of illness. And sometimes I'll even mention, I say, when this is over, when God pulls you through this, when you're up on your feet again, you'll have a story to tell. You'll have a witness, a testimony to give about what God has done for you. And that's true of every circumstance in life. When we're in the valley of the shadow of death, when we're suffering grief, when we're suffering loss, when we're suffering all kinds of issues in our lives and the circumstances of our lives, when God pulls us through, and He does, and He will. I don't know who I'm talking to this morning, but I'll tell you this. God sent me here to tell you this much. When you're in that circumstance of life, when you're in that difficult place, God is near. He's nearer to those who suffer. He's nearer to those who are alone than He is to anyone. And He will sustain you. He will lift you up. He will bring you through. And He does it so that His name might be praised and glorified, and that He might be honored, and that He might get the recognition that He is due for what He has done. Have we always done that in our lives? Have we always praised the Lord, or we just go, "Whew, boy, I'm glad that's over with. That was a tough thing. I'm glad I pulled through." And we look at others' extenuating circumstances and think maybe that that was the contributing factor and the reason we came through. Don't you see the hand of God in your life? That's what the eye of faith is. The eye of faith is able to see things that look ordinary and usual and natural to some people and to a casual outside observer. But to those that know the whole story, it's a testimony to the living power of God Almighty. 12 stones configured in a circle up on the riverbank on the plains of Jericho might not be too impressive. I doubt if it looked as good as Stone Mountain, Georgia. That's, you know, Mount Rushmore, that's pretty impressive. Stone Mountain, Georgia is pretty impressive. Why, even the pictures you see of ancient shrines all around the world, Stonehenge, you know, there's some pretty impressive configurations of stones. But it told a story. These stones came out of the riverbed. These stones came out of the lowest point of our journey here. And God brought us through. He brought us over, and we passed over. Now, the reason that Joshua wanted the people to set up these stones is that they might have an etiological purpose. That's a big word. I looked it up. Etiological. Actually, it means the reason. It's the search for the reason or the cause. If you see something that's here, you say, you ask the question, how did this come to be? What caused this? What happened here? And etiological concerns are those that give reasons for it. And that's precisely what Joshua wanted to do. He wanted to set up something where the next generation and the next generation and the next generation would observe and say, what is this? What do these stones mean? What's this configuration? Where did these stones come? What, this didn't just happen. This was deliberately designed and done here. What does this mean? And that would become then a pedagogical teaching opportunity. You can now teach your sons and your daughters, your children, about God, about His power to save, His power to deliver, and about His holiness and His and that which needs to be feared and reverenced. And by the way, if you study through the rest of the Bible kind of carefully, you'll see that Gilgal becomes a pretty important shrine in the life of Israel. It was the first campsite. They went on, of course, to Shechem, and there they had the great covenant ceremony. And eventually, as they moved into the land, they set up the tabernacle at Shiloh, and it became a very sacred, holy place in the life of Israel. But nothing ever really preempted that campsite at Gilgal. In fact, years later, the great prophet Elijah comes from Gilgal up to Jericho, meets with a bunch of his students as well as Elisha, and goes down to that site, that very site there at the Jordan River at Gilgal. And it's there that he reaches out to the water with his mantle and the waters part. And Elijah goes across. And then eventually God takes him into heaven. Something about crossing that Jordan is always prophetically important in the life of Israel. It gave them a great teaching occasion. It was kind of the first big visual aid that the Lord gave His people. And they're to teach the children and to tell them about the Lord. Not for one generation or two generations or three generations, but as a memorial forever. You little Gentile children, you little children of the peoples of the earth, you need to hear the story about how the great God of heaven and earth, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, delivered and rescued His people. And that He is that kind of a God. That's the way God deals with His children. He saves them, rescues them, delivers them, pulls them through, crosses them over, gives them everything they need. It's a memorial. Just don't ever forget it.